Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's T-A-I. LORMADE101.com and click on affiliates for details. So greetings and salutations, konnichiwa, to everyone tuning in from Australia, Asia, Africa, Antarctica, Europe, and of course, North and South America. Jima and I are excited to be back with you once again for taking a couple of weeks off. And today's in topics include Rick Perry. He enters the presidential race. So why is he the front runner? I'll run down the top five reasons he may win 2012. How did Tavis Smiley and Cornel West poverty tour become the Bash Obama tour? Also, another tour, this time is the Congressional Black Caucus. So why did they get so heated? Was Georgetown ambush? Or was this another episode of Hoya Basketball? And much, much, much more. We can't wait to hear from you. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. So to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And press 1 to talk and 2 to listen. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button. And, of course, follow me on Twitter. That's at TaylorMade101. And I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. But first, let's take a look at our current events. Now, current Texas Governor Rick Perry will, in all probability, be the potential president of the United States in January 2013. Now, some of the Fox News pundits have already predicted this and have already started to make this bold statement in the electronic media, and so now they're starting to print this. And in fact, there's an author that goes to say, let them lay out the five reasons Governor Perry will win if he's chosen to enter the race. Number one, Perry has created more jobs than Obama. Number two, Perry respects the importance of small business. Number three, Perry understands the issues of state sovereignty. Number four, Perry has core convictions. And number five, he appeals to all three categories of conservative. Now, when we open up the phone lines, I'd like for you to weigh in on them. And of course, I would be remiss if I didn't get Jima to weigh in on them as well. And I too have a few comments that may shock you. Also, we're going to be talking about Smiley West conflict, the conflict that they have with, I'm going to say, President Obama. Now, I don't know if many of you heard that there's an ongoing feud with Tavis Smiley and President Obama, as well as Cornel West. But we're going to definitely, I'm going to be bringing up some things that are going to pique your interest a little bit. And we're also going to be talking about Representative Waters and what she said at an event last week. In fact, there was an article written by Jeff Johnson in the Griot last week, and he writes, "Sparks flew Tuesday during the Congressional Black Caucus for the People Jobs Tour." Here we go with another jobs tour. "Town hall in Detroit, Michigan, as Black Caucus members told the mostly Black audience to unleash them to confront President Obama on the issues of jobs. During the sometimes heated town hall, people's frustration over their economic conditions overwhelmed decorum and order. California Representative Maxine Waters expressed her and other Black Caucus members' dilemma of having to walk a line. As representatives from communities that have had great love for President Obama, it can be anywhere from difficult to impossible for Waters and the other members to be as critical of the president as she wanted to be." And I want you to take a listen to some that Maxine Waters said.
Let me tell you why. We don't put pressure on the president because y'all love the president.
No.
You love the president. Just a minute. You're very proud.
We do.
You're very proud to have a Black man.
We are.
First time in the history of the United States of America. If we go after the president too hard, you're going after us. Hey? That's okay.
It's not just the president.
Just a moment. Let me finish telling you the reality of the politics of what's going on. When you tell us it's all right,
it's all right.
When you tell us it's all right and you unleash us, and you tell us you're ready for us to have this conversation, we're ready to have the conversation.
So basically she was saying that they don't put pressure, and this is the Congressional Black Caucus, they don't put pressure on the president because they say that we are very proud to have a Black man. This was, and I quote, this came out of her mouth. I'm not making this up. She said, "We are very proud to have a Black man in the White House. First time in the history of the United States of America." And she says, "If we go after the president too hard, you're going after us." Now, does Maxine Waters have a point? When you hear people always talking about the president, you know, people get backlash. So, I would love to get your comments on any or all of these issues. And so to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number to call is 323-580-5712. And we're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we're going to open up the phone lines and take your calls. And, of course, we're going to get my co-host, Jima, to weigh in on these and other issues. We'll be right back. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced-price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaiLorMade101.com. and click on Hunger Free.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company's tailor-made training and consulting, current events, and Ask Jima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We're going to open up the phone lines and hear from you, our listeners. In the meantime, Jima, I'd like you to weigh in some of these issues. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, first up, Rick Perry. Now, I believe that, first of all, that him entering the race, the presidential race that is really good for this presidential race, because the other candidates really didn't have, in my opinion, anything, any kind of record to run on. And if they did have a record to run on, like Mitt Romney, it was pretty much similar to what the president has done with his health care plan. But Rick Perry provides a stark contrast to the president and to the president's political agenda. So what do you think about Rick Perry entering the race?
Well, Ant would look good compared to those other candidates in there prior to Rick Perry. So, you know, that's not saying a whole lot about Rick Perry. So, of course, he was, you know, told he was a viable candidate and that he'd done all these, Texas was doing all these great and wonderful things, and he ought to take all these great and wonderful things nationally. The interesting part is he's the same person that has often spoke about the federal government staying out of states' issues. So he can't have it both ways if he wants to be the president of the United States. The president of the United States has to speak for all states and does things that will have an impact on all 50. So how can he not want the federal government to be a part of anything happening in your state and let you decide what you want to do in your state, but then decide that he wants to be the president of the United States? I'm confused about his motives right now, because they're contradictory in what he supposedly stands for. So he comes in with a record for sure. He comes in and he can tout certain things that I'm sure if you dig a little deeper, you may be able to kind of pull the onion back a little bit and be like, that's not quite all what the numbers say. But, you know, for right now, he looks good compared to all the other candidates at this time. He looks like a sure shot. So, you know, I'll give him that, but he's a weak end. So I'm not agree to sound an alarm or nothing.
But come on, let's face it. I mean, gubernatorial politics is a little bit different than presidential politics. So the things he did as a governor of Texas are going to be quite different than the things he would do for the nation. And so along those lines, I want to talk about his record, because you mentioned his record, or I mentioned his record earlier. Now, I talked about the top five reasons that Rick Perry could potentially beat president in 2012. And let's talk about number one, for example. Now, it is true that Perry has created more jobs than President Obama. Now, of all the issues that we face in the nation, the one that weighs even now most on the minds of most American people around the nation is that whether they'll find their next month's paycheck. And so since he's entered the race, all he has talked about has been jobs, jobs, jobs. And I think this is going to resonate with the American people, mainly because he has a record of creating jobs, and not to mention it comes at a good time when the president has focused on health care, he has focused on, you know, a lot of other things, but jobs has not been a focus.
Oh, okay. I agree with that.
So basically then that, you know, by him, you know, having a focus on jobs, and in this type of economy, that makes him, you know, in my opinion, it makes him a more viable candidate and a potential a thorn in the president's side come 2012.
Well, I think he's going to be a thorn, not to use your language, not only in the president's side, but in the side of those people that are in Congress that has for the last, you know, couple of years, because I don't, you know, just put all where we are on the blame of this new wave that came in November, because there was a time in which the Democrats controlled all three, and there was some Democrats that are known as blue dogs that are really Republican. They just, I don't know why they just don't become Republican, that have done some things to block what the president was doing. So in having Perry want to come in and talk about jobs, that's great, because it's going to force not only the president, but it's going to force Congress to do something about jobs, because as we all know, Congress is the one that writes the bill and legislates, because there's a part of the legislature of the branch of government. So it's incumbent upon them to come up with the bills that can then be voted upon and taken to the president. So although we want to put a lot of the onus on the president, he has a part to play in it for sure. But I doubt at the beginning of his term did he think he'd have so much backlash from his own party when it came to health care, because had health care not taken so long to deal with, and a lot of that was based on some of these quote-unquote Democrats, and I use them in quotes because I'm not real sure if they were really qualified. Had some of them not within the party still been mad and upset that it was him and not Hillary and all of that stuff that played out, health care should not have taken that long to get passed. But unfortunately, it did. And so because of that is why we're sitting where we are now, and some of the other things he had wanted to do, he hasn't been able to do. And then the wave come in of the new Republicans with their own mindset. They haven't said anything about jobs. Quite interesting, that's what they ran on. They ran on the economy. They ran on jobs, and not one job bill has come out of the House of Representatives. Now, whose issue is that? Is that the president's issue, or is that the House of Representatives' issue? So, okay. You know, I applaud Rick Perry for coming in, and I applaud him for having, you know, whatever stance he has on jobs and job creation. At the same time, I think not only will he be good for the president, because the president, because he can be so global in his thinking sometimes, that it's the minutiae of details that he has to communicate to the people. So maybe it's the Rick Perry that gets him to be able to speak directly to the people about what he needs, so then Congress can do what Congress needs to do. So I agree with you. He's going to be good for the president, no doubt about it. But I think he's also going to be good for Congress as well.
All right, let's go to our phone lines right now. All right, caller at 9723, welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name and where you're calling from. Do you have a question or a comment? Caller at
9723? That's
all the right.
Last four?
Yes, last four, 9723. All right, we're going to go to our next caller. Put you back on mute there. All right, we're going to go to our caller, last four, 6778. Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. What's your name and where are you calling from? Okay, we're going to try one more line here. All right, caller at last four, 7102. Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is the Esquire Abby Phelps, also known as Modi City Maharani. Hello there, my special fan Patrick and Jema. How are you?
Awesome, awesome. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. So glad to be here with you guys. And I was just listening to some of the dialogue. And you know something? My best referendum to this particular issue is the fact that President Obama is going to be reelected. He's going to be reelected because, you know, first of all, this man came in with a plan of action. He's done. He stuck to the guns. He's done just what he stated that he was going to do in his first 100 days of office. And I agree with Jema that when they, the Blue Dog Democrats, and I got a roster of their names in my office, trust me, they sat on this health care reform bill like they thought it was going to hatch into a rooster's egg. They are the ones that held up the process. It was enough that the right-wing extremists were doing their part, but when the Blue Dogs turned around and they vied, these are the secretive Hillary Rodham Clinton supporters. They did it on purpose. And literally he had to push an elephant across the border of India to halfway get to Pakistan to get this bill pushed. So we can look at a lot of the negligence as it relates to the job market, courtesy to the Blue Dogs for sitting up there being the worst hindrance that in the party and with the infrastructure of the government as well.
Now the president has a bullet pulpit. We can all agree on that, right?
Yes.
So when it comes to the issue of jobs, I'm going to kind of stay here, put a pin here for a moment, mainly because whenever we had a national issue, the Republican Party always framed the debate. They always shaped the conversation. And so when the president moved towards health care, they made it about death panels. When the president moved towards jobs, they made it about debt. And so
right.
I hear what both of you all are saying about the fact that he didn't have the Blue Dogs Democrats or he doesn't have a cooperating Congress. But it is the president's job to kind of bring them together, to make sure that the deals are being made, to make sure the legislation that he needs to get done through passed through Congress. And so we all know that deals get done every day behind closed doors.
Right.
We all
right.
know that they used to fill most of the legislation with a lot of pork.
Yeah.
And so although I hear you say that when the president, when 2012 comes around, that the president is a shoe-in as far as winning the election, but I can say
yeah.
that because of the state of the economy and because that there has not been a national conversation driven by the president about jobs continually, then it puts the president in a very fragile situation when it comes to
yeah.
2012. And so my point is that when Rick Perry, now, he has a record of creating jobs, when Rick Perry has had the best state of its economy compared to all other 49 states, then one must consider him to be a real viable contender when it comes to November of 2012. So,
yeah, I think he will be. I think he will be. I don't mean to interrupt you, Patrick, but I think that he will be. But, you know, Mitt Romney is trying to put in his bid because he's stating that, you know, he has a plan to get America out of debt. So you look at the job marketing industry. You look at the debt, you know, that this country is in. You know, those things are two crucial mental elements within the fragments of this government and this country. But at the same time, too, you got to think about foreign and domestic policy. What happens when those jobs are outsourced into other countries? Under the Bush anometry, which we dwelt in for a hellacious 8 years, it pushed a lot of the jobs that were domesticated here in America way across the border working for, you know, less than a tenth of what the American workers make. So when we look at the combination of what the Republican Party has done in the past under Reaganomics, which literally helped to bankrupt the country, the Iran-Contra ban, you know, issue evolved from that, then we look here and now at what Bushonometry did as far as starting a war with no resolve and no end, the Iraqi war. We're in trillions and trillions of dollars of debt thanks to him. The only people that made any money was Halliburton, courtesy of Vice President Cheney, who even, you know, got any gains from it. The Republicans don't have a very good track record as far as the economy is concerned. And if they don't have a good track record with as far as the economy is concerned, I truly doubt the authenticity of their ability to create jobs because they're the ones who push this thing to make those jobs go overseas. And so I don't feel very much that he's going to be a contender, but he's not going to be a force to be reckoned with because we got to think about policies, domestic and foreign policies. Those things are something top priority on the agenda. We got to rebuild the very relations that under the Bushonometry administration denigrated with other countries, whereas we would have had a more formidable basis, a more, you know, established watchdog establishment had we maintained those friendships. But under the Bushonometry administration, we lost a lot. We got to gain our credibility back so that we can turn around and become, you know, the leading nation of the world. But it's going to take a lot of work, and the president has his work cut out for him. I think this administration term was my trial and error. He learned a lot, gained a lot more of experience. And second time around, I think he's going to be very, very aggressive as it relates to jobs and foreign policies and things of that measure. And I predicate, I already say that he's going to win it. It's going to not going to be a narrow margin. It's going to be a substantial win because the Republican Party is in a heap of a lot of hurt. There's a diverse split within them. You know, you got the, you know, the Tea Party and you've got the Republican Party. There's no unity there. They take a good game, but they don't have anything behind it.
Okay, Abby. Okay, so we talked about, you know, issue number one that I raised at the beginning, the fact that Perry has created more jobs. And then the second thing that I talked about in these top five issues that people better pay close attention to, because they better not sleep on Perry. And the reason why I say don't sleep on him is because he has that bushwhacker. You know, that same thing that got Bush in the office will get Perry in the office. The same type of money that Bass Book may back Perry. Now, of course, the cover story that you hear, I'm going to let you weigh in here in a minute, Jima. The cover story that you hear a lot of times is that there are some things that separates Perry and Bush. There are some ideologies that's in the Bush camp that's not the same as the Perry camp. But that's just a cover story, because that same deep-rooted money is in Texas. And so I'm saying that just be cognizant of this Perry swagger is something similar to the Bush swagger. And just like Bush got in the office, it may put the same thing in Perry. Jima, your response.
Just a couple of things. I understand all that, and if we are into electing people based on style and no substance, then we're all in a world of trouble already. If that's the case, then Michelle Bachmann could be president, as could Sarah Palin. So, you know, that having said that, but when you talk about Rick Perry and the things that he was able to accomplish in Texas, let's not forget the fact that he talked about having a balanced budget. Well, he got that balanced budget because of the money he took from the federal government, the stimulus money. So that's how he was able to balance his budget. Now that money is gone, if you take a look at some of the things they're looking at cutting in the state of Texas, it all starts with education, health care, and dealing with our children. So he's going to be facing some of the same sort of backlash that other Republican governors have been facing previously. His just came a little bit later because of how he was able to use the stimulus money in 2009 and 2010. That's probably how he was able to get reelected when he got reelected last year, because he ran on, we have such a great budget and yada yada, and then he gets in the office in January and talking about all these cuts in the legislative session. So, you know, that goes back to what I was saying earlier about him as it relates to his not wanting the federal government to be involved in what's happening in states, but yet he took federal money to help balance his budget. So those are some things, some contradictions that hopefully once he sits down with a real reporter and not somebody walking up and down the street, but once he has that one-on-one, because if you notice, he hasn't had that exchange yet. It's all been town halls all in front of people that like him already. So I'm hoping that when he gets that interview, you know, with someone outside of Fox News, of course, he gets some other sort of interview that he's challenged on some of these things. But I'm not taking anything away from his body of work in terms of how things are going in the state of Texas as it relates to jobs. But some of these jobs wouldn't even be a livable wage in other states. So, there's a lot of things, you know, with that. So, but I'm not taking anything away from him. I agree he would be a good – I think he'd be a great candidate for for the president to run up against. And that's a debate I'd like to see, honestly. I'd like to see that back and forth between the two of them because of their styles. I would like to see that back and forth. You know, he comes off as abrasive. President Obama comes off sometimes kind of cool and collected. So, you know, how would American people respond to when they see that? You know, some people like somebody in the room yelling all the time. I want somebody to talk to me. So, you know, I think I agree with you, though, Patrick. I think he'll be a great
candidate,
but not just for the president. I think he'll be a great one for Congress right now.
All right, let me go to the phone line. Let me take another call here. This caller is last for 6778. Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your comments.
I'm calling from – my name is John Scott, calling from Kansas City, leaving the country. I'm not impressed with Rick Perry because it's too hot in Texas.
You can't
do
John,
about the rain.
How are you?
I just think that in the election cycle, you know, and the previous caller prior to GMNU commented, she had some valid points about the credibility issues with the Republican Party fiscally. Those fiscal matters are rather complex and cannot be brought down and watered down to sound bites. So they're never held accountable for those things. Because the counter to all of those things is, well, he's blaming the previous president. What are you going to do? And then they throw the trillions and trillions of dollars of debt, you know, on him. And no one's held accountable for hypocrisy at that level. No one's held accountable for ethics violations. And she mentioned Halliburton, and then there's KBR, and then there's the company formerly known as Blackwater, XE. I mean, they've made billions of dollars on the industrial war machine.
Uh-huh.
And hired out as subcontractors, not Americans, but East African former child soldiers, which is horrible, and exploit them by paying them $200 a month. But nobody calls them on that in a consistent manner and holds them accountable to answer questions about how accountable to you.
Okay, John, you're breaking up a little bit. But I want to give you an opportunity to continue what you're saying, and we're going to do that on the other side of the break. So hopefully when we come back from the break, we'll get John back on the line and allow him to finish his thought. Because I really want him to kind of expound on the fact that he talked about those billions of dollars that they were creating. Because we live in a capitalistic society, and because really money, it drives everything that we do, I would really like to get John to weigh in on the fact that if you have a president in the White House that generated the same type of economic power that Bush did, if the business owners knew that that was a possibility, do you think that they would be more apt to throw their money behind a president like that to get them elected? And I'm going to take his response on the other side of the break. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com. And click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, before the break, we were talking about Rick Perry and the top 5 reasons I think he may win the presidential bid coming in 2012. And we had John Scott on the line calling from Kansas City. He said he was traveling and we got disconnected. We want to bring John back on the line if we can, and hopefully we'll get him the opportunity to respond to the fact that there are billions of dollars out there that may be generated as a result of Rick Perry entering the race, and I wanted to get his comments on that. John, you with us?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think you have a point. I believe that the corporate business community will look at Rick Perry favorably because of his position on regulation. They don't want to be regulated. And the Obama administration has already put in place some regulations on the oil industry and the energy, you know, the energy industry as it relates to cap and trade and the banking industry, the financial industry. And so they want to be left alone. They want to be left alone to create new financial instruments that are unregulated so that they can get the ball rolling again, or that they can receive tax breaks and tax credits to continue to send jobs away from the U.S. And chase cheap labor all over the world, wherever it may exist. So Rick Perry will be extremely attractive to them. If the global community, if the global financial community does not embrace him, he will get a not-so-warm response as Bush did second time. In terms of his second term and the dollars that flowed toward him. But right now, he's looking like the candidate that can win, and his downsides are easily laughed away, and they smirk at everything that you talk about. They'll smirk at any of his deficiencies. They smirk at his very strong treasonous language when he was talking about taking Texas out of the Union.
Right.
And so no one brings that up. I mean, had that happened in 2003, you know, we saw the Dixie Chicks. You know, he treated white women real bad.
Boycotted
the Dixie Chicks. Bill Maher lost his show on ABC, and thousands of other people were just arrested for protest against the war. And, you know, there were no weapons of mass destruction. And they really put a dent in the credibility of a career soldier. You know, Colin Powell. You know, a lot of people in the African American community really started to look at him like he was just the ultimate sellout, and you know, as though he were on par and bought in completely, as though he were Condoleezza. But you know, they damaged his credibility just by the information that they brokered to him. They didn't give him the raw data. They brokered information to him. So, you know, they'll continue to do that and continue to smirk. And Perry will be a strong candidate. And people that don't read for themselves and receive the news from those one and two sources, you know, for us on this call, I believe, you know, that's preaching to the choir. But
right. There
are lots of us that will be very apathetic and say, well, he's a sitting president. He's the man. Historically, they've never treated a president like this ever before in terms of trying to change the dialogue to the deficit rather than jobs, and historically, our success has always been to spend our way out of trouble financially, either through war, where the war profiteering wasn't just shared by a handful of contractor companies that were related loosely and ethically to the presidency, and nobody went to jail over that, you know, and historically nobody went to jail with Iran-Contra, so. I think people just need to really read.
Yeah. Oliver North was the central attraction with that contraband.
So let me bring up point number three, because we talked about the fact of jobs. We talked about how attractive he looks to small businesses. Also, and John, you brought this up about him wanting to secede from the union. Well, point number three here, and is why I think he's going to be looking very attractive as a surefire candidate for 2012, is the fact that Perry understands the issue of state sovereignty. Now, Governor Perry has been famous for not exactly playing ball with the folks in Washington, D.C. He has tried to use everything from humor to a serious demeanor in his opportunities for dialogue with the president and his administration to convince them of the problems that can happen when the federal government oversteps, or what they call overreach or overspends. And because he keeps his taxes low, because he does a lot of things that are really attracted to businesses, and the fact that he says that, you know, if he doesn't agree with something, he always talks about this, you know, I'm leaving the union type of language. So, Jima, how do you think this is going to shape the popular opinion of Rick Perry because of this type of rhetoric he had in the past?
Well, I think for one thing, and as the caller stated, John stated, if the media doesn't report on it, then the average person isn't going to know about it. I know that Chris Matthews, every chance he gets, he mentions the fact that this is the same guy that talked about succeeding from the union. So there are some that are out there, but there's definitely not enough. And then, you know, you have the Republican strategists that will come on and say, oh, that was just, you know, in Josh, or, oh, that was just in response to, you know, something that the government was doing. So they try to downplay it like he really didn't mean it. But I think, you know, if he says it enough, and he has, then you have to take him at his word that that's what he really means. He really feels at some point he could just bow out. And so, you know, I'm just not sure why people aren't taking him serious on that. They take him serious on everything else. They take him serious on being a job creator. They take him serious on balancing his budget. But then let's not take him serious about succeeding from the union. Well,
so,
to me, I don't understand that.
So Abby, let me ask you this then. Well,
yes.
Because he, as a governor of a huge state with a huge
yes.
population like Texas, and the fact that
yes.
he said he kind of, from his viewpoint, is that the government has overreached or overstepped their bounds, then I want to leave, then does that give him a better perspective if he is in the White House to say, if I'm the president of the United States, I won't do that. I won't overstep my bounds because, as a governor, I understood how damaging or how detrimental it is to a governor if a president oversteps their bounds. Doesn't that make him attractive as well?
It makes him attractive, but you know, just because he's attractive doesn't mean that he's going to be so much a top-notch hot commodity. Because you think about it, Texas is a big state, a diverse culture indeed, but Texas is not the whole continental United States of America. See, you know, you're talking about one state in comparative analysis to the rest of the states. That's a much bigger picture. You know, you go from the micro to the macro, and it's going to be a whole different take should he even look up to be elected as president. And he has to look at the dynamics of that. You know, state politics are far different from the federal level, especially when you have the whole orchestration of the entire country. And, you know, it's still just to the point that I just believe that he's going to have to really build his platform. That one inkling is not nearly enough to gain the momentum of, you know, his delegation from the Republican Party. Because think about it, too. You've got Mitt Romney. You know, his father, George Romney, was the governor of the state of Michigan. So he comes from a politically, you know, cladded family. And he's, you know, one of the top runners, too, because they stated that he has a plan to get America out of debt. So what's more attractive, creating jobs or getting rid of the debt? You know, like the pro and the con perspective point of view. But it's going to be an interesting race, but I still see that President Obama is going to win without any degree of question. It will be a little challenge, but I don't know. Between Romney and Perry, it's going to be a tough race, and I think we're going to see a further split in the Republican Party because we got a lot of people who are looking at Romney from a different perspective. He's matured a lot. He's getting to be more like his old dad, the previous governor of Michigan from eons, you know, before. He's getting to be a little bit more cultured, a little bit more cultivated, as opposed to religiously astute. He's becoming more, you know, people-centered and more issue-centered. So it's going to be a toss-up between them, and I predicate there's going to be another split in the Republican Party like it was with the Democratic Party. You know, we had the Hillaryites versus the Obamaites, and that's what really got me frustrated to the point of saying, do I really want to remain in the National Democratic Committee? But I toughed it out, and I dealt with the 13th Congressional District, and I told them, look, it doesn't matter who we delegate, we've got to get the best person for the job. And you
well,
know,
Abby,
look
Abby,
at the whole
Abby,
yes.
Abby, I tend to disagree with you here, and I'm going to tell you why I disagree. I'm going to say
okay,
that
okay.
No, mainly I don't think the Republican Party ever liked Romney. I think that they were just his front man because they didn't have anybody else that was, you know, palatable to them. you know, they say, well, we kind of toyed with him. And in fact, anytime, and I'm gonna tell you why I say that. But anytime you have a McCain, somebody that's been around for many moons, and then you have somebody like Romney that was, you know, a viable candidate last time, there's nothing he did differently from last time that he's doing this time. He's running his campaign differently, but he's the same guy.
He is.
He's the same guy.
Right.
Same guy they didn't want last
right.
time, so it's going to be the same guy they don't want this time. And so they was waiting. They're waiting on their guy. Their guy.
He didn't convert.
He did. He did not. And so
he didn't convert.
He's still a Mormon. He's still a Mormon. That's right. He's still a Mormon.
Right. But they still don't have their guy. That's the sad part about it. They still don't have their guy.
But
for everyone that liked Rick Perry, there's 20 that don't like Rick Perry and that like Mitt Romney or like Michelle. Right. They're still waiting on the one candidate that they all can say, this is the one. I mean, because, you know, just this week they were still talking about Chris Christie. And then I heard Jeb Bush's name come back up. So, you know, they're
still not completely happy
with their candidate pool right now. But I want to go back to something you said, Patrick, about Rick Perry and whether or not the federal government is stepping out of bounds. The problem with that statement for me is that, you know, he hasn't, in my opinion, clearly defined the area or what the bounds of the federal government is, because he keeps moving the posts. Because on the one hand, you know, he doesn't want government to be in his state's business, but on the other hand, he has his hand out for some government money. So he can't have it.
And that's a hypocrisy that you'd call.
That's a mixed message.
Exactly.
Yes.
And so, like I stated earlier, he balanced his budget on federal money, and then when he felt like the president wasn't moving fast enough to offer aid when we were having the fires, then he out talking about the federal government isn't here and President Obama just doesn't like Texas. Well, which one is it, you know, Mr. Perry?
Right.
Do you want the federal
government
to be involved and to help out in your state when you need it, or do you or not? So those are the sorts of hypocrisies, as John stated, that are not called out.
That's
and hopefully, as he gains national attention and people begin to vet him a little more than the sound bites that we've heard and seen thus far, that some of these things will be called out. But if not, you know, we the people have to be able to have dialogue and call these sorts of things out and educate
those about some of the hypocrisies
that are going on.
That is why.
Can I say something behind that, Patrick,
I want to piggyback on something Jima said, is that this is why, you know, I'm encouraging as many people to listen to Current Events with Patrick Cook, because we present both sides of the argument. We put the information out to the people so they can sift through it for themselves, as opposed to watering it down, right? You get this message, and what I mentioned earlier, you get the cover story, and you know that people are dropping out, and these people are against these people, things of that nature. But when you have a venue or have a forum like we're having today, it gets the message out to the people. Okay, Abby, your response.
Yes. Thank you so much, Patrick. And behind what Jima said, you brought back flashbacks from the past. And the rebuttal to what they said as to whether or not Obama liked the state of Texas, why he was so slow in responding, apparently George W. Bush Jr. didn't like the state of New Orleans, Louisiana, because, hell, they was too damn weak sending them any assistance whatsoever. These people were drowning. You could see them on the top of their houses submerged in water. So what was the recluse behind that? You know what I'm saying? Nobody ever spoke about it. He just said about how sorry he was, and that FEMA had to go through so many laterals to get to the very elements of things, and he fired Mr. Brown, saying that it was his responsibility. No, it was your responsibility as the president to see to it that that city got rescued. That whole entire city, $200 billion yesterday, the highest, you know, casualty upon the American soil, the most horrific thing that could ever happen imaginable in this country, happened right down there in New Orleans, Louisiana, 2005. $200 billion calculated to this state.
Yep, I have to agree with you. Now, so I want to move on to number four, which is the fourth thing I said that may be the reason that Rick Perry could give President Obama a lot of trouble in 2012 is the fact that Perry has some core convictions. Now, recently, Governor Perry allowed his Labrador retriever to accompany him on his daily six-mile jog. Now, while on his run, he and his pet were accosted by a coyote. I don't know if you know about this, but after remaining still and waiting to see what the wild coyote would do, the governor pulled out a 380 and shot the coyote dead when it became apparent that the coyote was after his puppy. Now, of course, you've heard, and I don't know if you heard this in the news lately, that President Obama doesn't like his dog. You've been hearing people out crying about the fact that he doesn't like that dog he has in the White House. So here you have Rick Perry has these core convictions. He's obviously a gun 380 carrying person, and he jogs with his dog. Now, come on. Now, how can President Obama compete with that? John.
It is just more of the narrative to get away from the real substantive issues.
Mm-hmm.
So that
right.
he's our cowboy, tough guy. We need a president that's more aggressive. You know, it's the things that we face during the workplace. If we are assertive, we're perceived as aggressive. If Obama had run the table with his Democratic Congress, and I know that the policies that he initiated or requested, legislation he requested was not extremely, it wasn't aggressive enough for the progressives, but if he had run the table right after the second stimulus, because all of a sudden everyone became financial experts and wanted to stop the auto industry stimulus after saying okay to the $700 billion that went to the financial. I mean, it's just a part of the narrative. He's got to just be steady. I don't hate my dog. If I didn't like my dog, he wouldn't live here. I mean, you can't talk to – it's like George Herbert Walker Bush spoke to a Clinton political operative that would follow him at every event wearing a chicken suit. You Google it.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
He would always ask these outlandish questions of Herbert Walker Bush. And then it finally happened where the president of the United States is talking to a chicken. And so now you got him. So he can't respond to any of that. He can't talk to any of that madness. Like, he really shouldn't have said anything directly related to Donald Trump. It was just so beneath the presidency.
Right.
And and we can't do what they do, ever.
Right.
No. So it'd be worse than Dukakis' picture with the silly tank helmet on.
That's
a blandy trap for him. And so far, Obama's been super cool and has just said, hey, we need to stop being children. And as executive branch, I have to try to be the point guard for compromise. Now, my congressional Democratic leaders don't have to be as nice as I am. But since you've been trying to play business as usual and get things for their own district and raise money, because nobody's watching, nobody's really hardcore watching.
We're gonna get to that in just a moment. Speaking about the Congressional Black Caucus, but before we do that, I want to talk about the fifth component here, which is. He appeals to all three categories of conservative. Now, Jim, I want you to weigh in on this. Now, Ronald Reagan was the first Republican candidate to bring together the conservatives across the economic, social values, and strong military spectrums. Now, Governor Rick Perry has already demonstrated his ability to do the same. Now, Jim, do you think this fifth and final component of this road to Rick Perry's White House is going to be the nail in Obama's coffin?
I do not think that component will be for the same reasons that we talked about earlier, and that, you know, he has a certain swagger and he has a certain style, but at the end of the day, he has to put some meat on the table, and he has to have a little bit more depth than what he has shown thus far. So right now he's the mannequin in the window that has the right outfit on. But what happens when you go in and you try the outfit on? Will it look as good on you as it looks on the mannequin? So right now we're looking at the mannequin, and the mannequin looks like it looks. But you know, as time goes on, you know, we're in August of 2011. We got a whole nother summer to go through. you know, a lot can happen between now and even this time next year.
Right.
A lot can happen
right.
between now and 6 months in terms of the economy and how things will turn around or not. I mean, so it's kind of, you know, I think, you know, we should just kind of, you know, pump the brakes a little bit, even on our, you know, so-called disgust or disgruntledness with the president. Just, you know, everybody take a pause for a second and look at where we really are and whether
right.
or not if McCain and Palin was in the White House right now. Because that was your option back in 08, was McCain and Palin.
Right.
And if we're thinking things are bad now, can you imagine mm-hmm. how things would have been? We'd probably
oh,
be in another
God.
War by now, really. I'm
we
pretty
would
sure
be.
We would have started
would
something somewhere.
We
so because that's what they
that's
do
right.
to take your focus off of what's really going on. They put us
yes.
in another war. So, you
yes.
know, so I think Kerry, although he looks good right now, and, I, you know, going back to what John was saying, the hypocrisy of some of the things that he's done and what he says, and then do we believe him or not believe him, there's some credibility issues there. But if people stay asleep, they won't know it. So, you know, they'll think the outfit will look good on them, too, and they'll just keep their eyes closed and put the outfit on, not realizing that it don't look right on them. So I think, you know, he'll have to give us more than what he's given us. Hopefully the media and voters will require him to do that.
All right, so I want you to try this on for size. Last week in the Griot, Jeff Johnson wrote this provoking article. It reads, "Sparks flew Tuesday during the Congressional Black Caucus for the People's Job Tour Town Hall in Detroit, Michigan, as black caucus members told the mostly black audience to unleash them to confront President Obama on the issues of jobs. During the sometimes heated town hall, people's frustration over their economic conditions overwhelmed decorum and order. Now, California Representative Maxine Waters expressed her and other black caucus members' dilemma of having to walk a line. As a representative from communities that have had great love for the President Barack Obama, it can be anywhere from difficult to impossible for Waters and the other members to be as critical of the president as she wanted to be." Now, I played earlier during the opening of the show something that Maxine Waters said. I'm going to play it again, and I want Abby to weigh in on this, because Abby, you out of Michigan, right?
Yes, I am. Detroit, Michigan, the hotbed.
I want you to take a listen at Representative Maxine Waters' comments here, and then I want you to comment. Take a listen.
Okay, sure.
We don't put pressure on the president. Let me tell you why. We don't put pressure on the president because y'all love the president. You love the president. You're very proud to have a black man. First time in the history of the United States of America. If we go after the president too hard, you're going after us. Hey! No. That's okay. Just a moment. Let me finish telling you the reality of the politics of what's going on. When you tell us it's all right, when you tell us it's all right and you unleash us and you tell us you're ready for us to have this conversation, we're ready to have the conversation.
Okay, so Abby, basically she said
yes.
that they don't put president, the Congressional Black Caucus,
because
mm-hmm. that we love our president. We are very
yes.
proud to have a black man in the White House. So therefore, the Congressional Black Caucus, they don't put pressure on the president to do his job. What are your thoughts?
Hmm.
Is she right?
Okay.
Well, you know what? Yes and no. My thing was when I delegated to support President Obama in his infancy phases of being just nominated by the Democratic Party, it wasn't because he was a black man. It was because he was partially a white man. I thought he was the right person to put in that position because of his knowledge, his credibility, and the stamina that he projected as being a quiet yet resounding leader. That was my reason for supporting him. And I think that Maxine kind of got caught up on emotions a little bit because the crowd was a little bit raunchy, a little bit off-center and everything. And this was her rebuttal saying that literally if you're going to talk this man down and walk him down, you're crucifying. You're making him the second Jesus Christ. You're going to crucify him, and you're going to send him to the cross. And this is what white America wants you to do, to lynch your own people. I think that's where she was coming from, to defend the nature and the character of his posture. That's what she was trying to do. I think she could have been a little bit more creative as to say that, you know, it's far better to say we support our president, even though there's some trouble sometimes and some issues that need to be resolved, it's going to take time. And she should have been a little bit more creative to kind of go back into a little history. I know it's kind of hard when people are really hyped up and their emotions, the adrenaline is pumping, and, you know, the neurotoxins are hitting the brain, and whatever is in the mind comes through the mouth. But the point, you should have utilized a little creative history to kind of take them back to how we got into this mess about the jobs. It was, you know, the actual deportation of jobs from the United States of America into foreign countries that got us into this fix that we're in. You know, and not so much the president, he's trying to resolve it, but the first, you know, period of his presidency was trial and error. He had to thumb through all of the things that George W. Bush did from the previous administration to try to work out strategies to get this country out of the fix that it's in. But health care, and I agree with Jima, because I worked on that committee here in the city of Detroit, that was the toughest thing that we had going. We had to fight our own party men who were of the blue dog persuasion who kept talking it down. You know, almost a year and a half, almost 2 years to get something that shouldn't have taken any longer than 2 to 3 months. So we have to look at the whole emphasis of everything. But the whole thing, I think she was angry. She was upset because, once again, it seemed like they were attempting to make him the second Christ and to actually crucify him. And it was considered like a black issue. If this man was of the other persuasion, you wouldn't respond this way. But we only do it to our own. So I kind of look at it as a twofold way. But in part she was right, but she could have been a little bit more in-depth and kind of a little bit more explanatory to get them to where she needed them to be.
So, Jim, let me get you to weigh in on this, too, because, you know, it's interesting on how she positioned herself. I mean, so earlier I mentioned that the Republicans do a good job, or a great job, in fact, of shaping the conversation. When they have talking points, all Republicans say the same talking points. I don't care, you know, if you're far right, medium, or, you know,
yep,
or leaning left. They all give you the same message. But when it comes to the Democrat, it seems like they are more dysfunctional in how they proceed towards an issue. Instead of getting behind closed doors, coming up with a united compromise, not saying
the
this group versus this group versus this group. And so they don't have a consistent message. So when they come out and you hear the Congressional Black Caucus talking one way, then you hear this thing called the Blue Dog Democrats talking another way, and then you hear the what they call the progressives talking another way. These three tiers of the Democratic Party, as opposed to this one unified message that the Republican Party has. Now, really, the Tea Party is really taking over. So, Jima, what do you think about Maxine's positioning of her language, basically?
Well, I think it's interesting that this jobs tour received little to no coverage until she made the statement about the president.
Mm.
So then all of a sudden, it's coverage that the Congressional Black Caucus even exists to the national media, number one. I think her language in terms of unleash us, why do I have to unleash you to do your job? As I stated earlier, I'm an equal opportunist when it comes to those in the elected positions, they have a responsibility as well to create legislation. So where is the jobs bill from the CBC? Where is the jobs bill from the Progressive Caucus? Or have they come up with one that will unify the Democratic Party and say, here's our jobs bill? My biggest complaint with the Democratic Party is when Paul Ryan came out with whatever his budget thing was, there should have been a Democratic counter, not from the president, but from the Congress. The Democratic those in Congress should have had a plan that meant, that was the exact opposite of whatever Paul Ryan was coming up with. But no, they have sat back this entire time. The president has been in office on their hands, waiting on him to lead them. That means, in my opinion, that some of them have been there too long. And as Reverend Sharpton so, you know, adequately stated, some of them been there longer than the president been in all been born. So they've been there too long. They've gotten way too comfortable in their position that I have to lead you to do. You, I as your constituent, have to unleash you to go do what you know you was elected to do. So you
like
go out on this jobs tour. Right. You go out on this jobs tour, and yes, jobs, do not misunderstand me. That is real important. But we was losing twice, quadruple the amount of jobs under Bush. Where was the job tour under Bush? Where was the unleash us to go after Bush?
Because the
unemployment rate for African Americans has always been double that of the national. Let's not play like it just became double under President Obama.
No,
our numbers
that's
have
right.
always it was double under Clinton. But it wasn't
that's
double
right.
digits, so we went from 4, national average was 4, African Americans was 8. That's still double. 4 times 2 is always 8, I understand. So that's always double. So here we sit, want to play as though these numbers in the African American community have just skyrocketed. No, they've always been high. But where was the jobs tour then? And I know you're going to get to Chavis and West. My question going to be, where was the poverty tour then? Well, you know, so it's all of a sudden we wanna make this be President Obama.
That's right.
And his policies or lack thereof. But in reality, you guys have been in some of these elected positions for a very long time. So where was the jobs bill? And if you have put forth the jobs bill and the people in your House of Representatives failed to even bring it up to be discussed, we should know that. And we should know that every time it happens, there should be a press release that comes out about what the CBC is doing or what the Progressive Caucus is doing so that we'll know that you're trying to do something. Don't tell me you haven't had a chance to talk to the president and that, you know, this is your first time meeting with the president. What did you go in there and talk about 2 months ago? When you went and had your meeting with the president and you all were strategizing, what did y'all talk about? Now you're saying we need to unleash you. You know, it's some hypocrisy and some contradiction. I expect elected officials, and maybe my expectations are too high, but I expect elected officials to do their job. And Maxine Waters, in my opinion, you know, she getting a little older. You know, she probably at that point where she feels like she can say what she wants to, because just yesterday she told the Tea Party they can go straight to hell. So, you know, she's on a whole nother level right now. But I don't think that that all of this falls on the president. He has a part to play in it, but so do they as the CBC.
Now, John Scott, do you believe that the Congressional Black Caucus are being opportunists here? Are they taking advantage of this particular situation for press, just to get their name back out in the public?
I absolutely think that Negroes is just late to the game. That jobs tour primarily is really to try to change the narrative and then drive, based on the number of people that you get out, you then drive legislation. But they should have done that in January to prevent the narrative to be about the debt ceiling.
Right, right.
Because that's what all summer was spent about. You know, all summer was spent talking about the debt ceiling rather than, you know, jobs. Okay. And at the end of the day, they're just late to the game. And it's just sad when they're trotted out on the news, you know, this last, you know, couple of days where our these black or African-American leaders are talking on my behalf. I'm saying you're late to the game. I've been asking about this, you know, from day one. You know, hey, what legislation will actually work towards the funding or the funding the mandates associated with the public bonds that'll put some public projects out there and put boots on the ground?
Right. So so speaking of tours, and Jimmy, you kind of introduced this, and I'm going to kind of follow, kind of shift gears here now to another bus tour. And this bus tour was put on by Tavis Smiley and Cornel West. Now, there was an interesting article in the Washington Post and the Post Opinions page by Jonathan Capehart. Now, you may know him from his frequent appearances on MSNBC. Well, in the article, he writes, a seven-day, 14-city bus tour highlighting the plight of America's poor is a great idea. Income equality is the greatest it has ever been. Unemployment remains stubbornly high, and the solutions to the economic insecurity facing all but the mega-rich seems out of reach. That anyone would take time to shine a light on poverty is commendable. That is, unless said tour is being led by Princeton University professor Cornel West and television host and author Tavis Smiley. Now, pardon the pun, but a poverty bus tour guided by these two is a flawed vehicle for discussion. You'll recall that in April 2010, Smiley criticized the president for lacking a definable black agenda and demanded that Obama take the issues of black America more seriously. Then, in May of this year, West lashed out at the president, calling him a black mascot of Wall Street oligarchs and a black puppet of corporate plutocrats. It was a slam as ugly as it was obnoxious, made worse because it was animus-based in pettiness. West remains peeved that he wasn't invited to the inauguration. Smiley hasn't been the same since Obama didn't show up at a forum during the 2008 presidential campaign, but sent his wife Michelle in his stead. Whatever Smiley and West have to say about poverty and Washington's inadequate response to it, no matter how right, true, or fair, will forever be colored by their personal pique against the president. Now, I thought this was a very interesting comment, but when we return from this short break, I'm going to let you hear what Steve Harvey had to say. Now, if you know Steve Harvey, he doesn't bite his tongue. Stay tuned. I'm going to play his comments. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com. and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. And to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. 7712. So before the break, we talked about the Tavis Smiley and Cornel West comments. Actually, we're talking about their bus tour. And I wanted to play for the listening audience the comments that Steve Harvey made. Now, I don't know if you were able to caught this, but Gima wrote about this in the current events blog a couple of days ago. And there was an interesting article out there. If you haven't seen it, just go to TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade Talk Radio, TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. And Gima has a great article out there about this particular Jonathan Capehart's written opinion and Steve Harvey comments. I'm going to play his comments. Take a listen.
An email, and this is what I want to base the phone blast on. Check this out.
Okay.
Right. Hey, Morning Crew, because you are not as deep into politics as I am.
Okay, great.
I think that there is something that you need to know. Some members of the Republican Party are not the only ones wanting President Obama to fail. Tavis Smiley and Cornel West are doing a so-called poverty bus tour under the guise of highlighting that issue. Because we all know poverty did not exist before January 20th, 2009. However, if you check their records, you will find that they have done a lot of poverty pimping through book sales, TV appearances, speaking fees, and promoting the woe is me mindset among the disenfranchised and discouraged. This has been their hustle for a long time, and now President Obama has threatened that with his message of hope and self-empowerment. Just think of what would happen if more people made the effort to tap into their God-given abilities. These jokers would be out of business. Their plan is to discourage a large voting bloc of the president's base so that their lucrative hustle will once again be secure. Just thought you might want to inform your listeners. Obama, Biden, 2012, Mrs. Jones from Charleston. Well, Ms. Jones, that's our 30-second phone blast. What do you think of this move by Tavis Smiley and Cornel West? What are your views? Have you been keeping up with these two gentlemen? What are your thoughts?
I'm really surprised, man, to be honest with you, because
what?
You know, I was a huge fan of Cornel West.
Oh,
really,
yeah.
Really. I'm really, man.
Brilliant.
Really love him.
I'm not surprised at Tavis at all.
Tavis, I see him coming a mile away. Because
he been
Tavis Smiley's anger started when he was having a town hall meeting.
Yeah.
President Obama was supposed to come. He couldn't come because of the campaign trail. And he sent Miss Obama.
Right.
He has held that grudge ever since.
And then Professor West was upset because he wasn't invited to the inauguration, as we understand it. Is that correct?
Hey, man,
to the presidential inauguration?
Hey, I wasn't there either.
Yeah. But are you upset?
Yeah, for what?
Do you have a poverty bus tour?
Have you ever been invited to the damn inauguration?
Okay.
Did Bush send for you? Clinton send for you? Did Reagan send for you? What you mad 'cause President Obama, who don't fill out the guest list, ain't got time to tend to that.
That's
Do
right.
you know how many people wanted to be at the inauguration, man?
Mm-hmm.
So this is about not saying thank you. They're mad at the president for not saying thank you.
Well,
we don't really. It's very petty. That's what it's about.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The disguise is the disguise of it all.
Mm-hmm.
He's
mm-hmm.
not doing for Black America what he should be doing. But let me help everybody to something right here and understand this. And this is in layman terms. You are so wrong when you make that statement. But he is the president of the United States. He is not the president of the hood.
Of Black people.
He is the president of the United States.
Everybody.
But if you look at what he's pushing, no one could benefit greater than our community. Health care. Who is lacking in health care overwhelmingly than anybody else?
Mm-hmm.
Who is that? Who is lacking in education overwhelmingly than anybody else? And who do you know could stand a tax break above anybody else? So all you got to do is fit yourself into the equation and you'll see that he's doing everything he can. But it's not for us.
It's for the American people.
Yes.
And the moment we quit saying us, gimme, 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 and just plug yourself into the already existing system, which ain't going to change just because you want it to, then we can move on with this thing. The man is doing a great job. So we're taking your call.
Okay. So, Jima, let me get you way in for it. What do you think about Steve Harvey's comments?
Well, I think he was right on point, you know, in terms of we've tried to marginalize this president to be a president just for people of color, and he is the president of the United States, number one. Number two, I think as it relates to the tour of Tavis and Dr. West, I don't really think we need to highlight poverty. I really don't think there should be a tour highlighting poverty. I would like to know, as I stated in my article, you know, did they do a jobs fair on this poverty tour? Did they do any voter registration on this poverty tour? You know, we're looking at a time where a majority of states, we have over 25, 26 states that are looking to turn back the hands of time, so to speak, as it relates to voting rights. That's what we ought to be having a tour about, making sure that people in these states have the right documentation so that when it's time to vote next year, they have their papers in order. That's the tour I'm waiting on. I'm waiting on a voting rights tour. I'm waiting on the tour that really help people in the situation where they are right now. So in terms of what Steve Harvey had to say, you know, I agree with him. You know, I think we lose credibility on all levels when we do the name calling. So I guess somewhere later on there, he did call them some Uncle Toms or whatever. And I think that's what that's what's gotten them in trouble, is that the name calling that they've done against the president. I have no problem with either one of them or anybody critiquing the president on his policy. But when you begin the name calling, you make it petty and you diminish and you take away from the validity of what your true concern is.
Okay, so John,
I want
you
to name call.
John, I want you to weigh in on this. I talked about this several weeks ago. I talked about the fact that when the reason why he was so upset was because President Obama dissed Cornel West in front of his mama. I don't know. I read the story a couple of months back, and I talked about the fact that when Cornel West's mom asked Cornel about the inauguration, and she said to him, "You didn't get any tickets?" And you know, he had to respond to his mom, so he got dissed in front of his mom. And so you know how it is if you get dissed in front of your mom.
Yes,
I do, but yes. I just think that it's deeper than that. I don't know what his issue is particularly, but with regard to Smiley, I mean, he's been, you know, back in the day when I was in the mayor's office in Kansas City and he was in Bradley's office, he was a pretender then. And, you know, I didn't begrudge him making money off of the issues and working with, you know, BET. Who would absolutely work for that organization unless just to get paid? So he exposed himself for who he was. And to have an event or a series of events that's no different than the poor people's exposure that King did, 40 years ago, shows his lack of originality, shows that he's not solution-oriented, and it shows that he's become what people try to say Jackson was and that Sharpton was. I mean, he's a hustler on things that are hurting our people, and he's not really been solution-oriented. You know, not beyond the great discussions and great C-SPAN television, you know, really being a leader and truly being a person that understands what business owners go through, and being that, he's just been a pretender for a long time. So I just don't listen to it. It's not real news. It's not going to affect people that read. Hey, but I got to run through security. I love y'all. I got to run through security.
All right, love you too, man. Yeah. Hey, appreciate you chiming in.
Wow.
All right, thanks.
And I think the other
That's
thing
terrible.
Also,
oh.
if I can interject, the other thing also is that when you go back to the 10 years that he did do the State of Black America, and we came up with this 10-point plan and our covenant with Black America, if we go back to that, I mean, you know, the ending of it all was what could be done in every community. What could communities do for themselves as opposed to waiting on government or somebody else to come and do? There are things that everybody can do within their own community to help lift us up out of this dark space. So, you know, what happened? So because we no longer have, you know, C-SPAN and the book and all the people on stage and the forum, so now you don't believe in the things that you preached on for 10 years. I mean, I thought it was excellent at the time. And then to culminate that going into the election of Obama, and all of a sudden it's over. I mean, it's like the work. It's like all of a sudden people just stop working. Did we think that poverty was just gonna go away because of President Obama? The Bible says that there will always be the poor among you. So we know that. So how do we help people to just be better in the situations that they find themselves in? You know, what's going on in our education system does not require Rick Perry or President Obama or anybody else. Parents have to start, you know, doing some things with their children as well. And if you know of parent who is struggling to read, and you've got a church that should be open more than just on Wednesday and Sunday, why not start a literacy program in your church? Even if you go to the library and check out books that are free. I'm not telling you to spend no money. You can go to the library and check out books and begin something that will have a lasting impact on the community. So the poverty tour did what? Did it register people
Nothing.
To vote? Did it steer? Did the sponsors, because I know the tour was sponsored by someone, did the sponsors have a job fair? Did the sponsors do any job training for people? You know, that would have been more impressive for me, even with the CBC. I know they didn't sponsor it. I know they didn't sponsor their job fair. So did the sponsors go out and do anything? How many people actually walked away with the job? I know down in Atlanta, they said they had to shut it down because it was so many people the place they was in couldn't hold the people. Well, what did you think was going to happen? You go to a city like Atlanta. What did you think was going to happen? That did you not do the research to figure out where you could make the most impact? No, they went to the cities that had the most amount of hurting black people and wanted to put all that out there. But you could have gone to another city and made a greater impact to help that city develop. And that's what my problem is in this whole thing. And so Tavis and them ends their tour in Memphis at the Lorraine Motel in tribute to Dr. King. Okay, that's fine. But, you know, Dr. King was more about talking. He did some things. You know, he was part of more than just a moment. He was part of a movement. And these people have yet to be part of a movement. Everything they do is reactionary. Like John said, he doesn't have an original thought. So if you wanted to impress me, any of them, anybody out on these tours, you know, just like next week with the unveiling of the King Memorial, I hope there's some voter registration going on. While we're having all these parties and whatnot, I hope we're registering people to vote. I hope that each site, states that are having their voting rights turned back, that they are really out canvassing neighborhoods, asking people, do you have all the documents you need now? Not waiting until October. But we need to be having this conversation now, not waiting to see if things are going to be overturned. Because if they're not overturned, we're going to be the ones left behind, period.
Well, I have to agree with you there, but I just want to know, you know, when it, you know, for those 10 years that they had those panel discussions, for those 10 years that they promoted their book, for those 10 years that they had this national conversation, this national agenda, and for the most part, that Tavis Smiley always talked about, well, we don't need another leader. The leaders are among the people now. What changed? What changed for Tavis Smiley and Dr. West after being on stage for 10 years selling up books with basically a roadmap on how we should do these things, with an agenda of how we should hold person accountable? What changed?
Mm-hmm.
I just want to know, what changed from there?
And I want to know, where was this? He talks often about, I don't know, Frederick Douglass was who pushed somebody, and he's the President Frederick Douglass or whatever he's saying. I can't remember what he said. But anyway, in stating that, I want to know from the Bush administration and the last 2 years of the Clinton administration, where was this same amount of pressure? You know, where was the tours then? Where was the highlight? Because we were already on a decline. See, we want to forget of the laws that Clinton put in place, the difference between crack and cocaine, and the difference in sentencing that placed a lot of our young men of color in penal systems. We want to forget that was all under Bill Clinton. That was all under Bill Clinton, being able to certify young people as young as 13 as adults, thus placing them in the adult penal system. That was all under Bill Clinton. So we want to forget that part of his presidency and just want to talk about the glory days. So then when Bush comes in, and then we're still riding, we're still in some sort of euphoria and still asleep. And so for, you know, the first 6 years of his presidency, nobody's really paying attention. And then toward the end, we realize, wow, we're still in these two wars. Yeah. We're still in these two wars, and we are still poor, and military families are still hurting. Veterans are the amount of veterans that are homeless is ridiculous. Those numbers have not gone down under anybody's administration. So, you know, those are the things we need to be talking about instead of this petty stuff about whether, you know, and then for Chavez to say on this tour as well that President Obama is the first president that hasn't invited him to the White House. What does that have to do with the poor people?
So what do you what's their motive? Okay, so I think anybody can read this open book, right? We all see that there's some obvious animosity between Chavez, the president, Cornel West, the president. I'm going to even include Al Sharpton, because Cornel West has continuously jabbed at Al Sharpton. Now, you know, full disclosure, we know that you you talk to Al Sharpton on a frequent basis. You tweet him, y'all have a conversation. So I know that your comments may be skewed more towards Al Sharpton than Cornel West. But I just want to know, what's their motivation? Why would they do this at this point in our history?
It has to be something as simple as they have been somewhat not granted the access that they thought they were going to have. Although language that they've used in the past has always been about they don't do anything to be seen or to be noticed, but yet in this instance they want to be seen and noticed by the president. So, you know, it appears as though they haven't been quite genuine with us in their comments over the years. And as an intellect, I love Dr. West as an intellect. I've read several of his books, and I don't dislike him now. I dislike the fact that he's allowed his personal issues to come into play as it relates to how he talks about the President of the United States of America, because I've never heard him talk about any other president this way. So it has to be personal, because it can't be about policy, because he sure would have had something to say about Bush. And he sure would have had something to say about Clinton if it's just about policy. So it's more than that. And that's
right.
The smoke and mirrors of it all. And
right,
I think
right.
As it relates to Reverend Sharpton is that, you know, he has access. But Reverend Sharpton has not changed. He has been who he is this entire time. He's changed in terms of he's grown and matured.
Right.
And he doesn't come off as haughty as he once was. But in terms of being a part of the struggle, he's been a part of the struggle. He's been on the front line for a long time. And so he's not doing anything different than he's always done. As he stated, he's the watchman. And it's the job of the watchman to make the loudest noise to inform you when the enemy is coming. So he's always been on the front line letting you know what's going on. And so he's not doing anything different than he's always done. He's just joining now in places that you would not have expected to see him. But that's because we like to put people in boxes, and we like to keep people where we want them to be as opposed to seeing them grow and develop. And he's not trying to take over anybody's job or take over anybody's area. There's room for everybody. Everybody just needs to figure out what lane they're going to travel in and travel in your lane.
Yeah, you know, the laborers are the work is plenty, but the laborers are few. And so
yes,
I don't understand why they have to fight for this particular position or put themselves in this area where they got the, you know, I have to be, you know, the leader of the pack as opposed to a follower. And so another thing that strikes me as odd is the fact that Reverend Sharpton has a record. Year in and year out of doing things where these, Cornel West and Tavis Smiley only has a record of what they talked about, not necessarily mm-hmm. what they've done. And so Reverend Sharpton's record really is what makes him stand out and which makes him threaten the Cornel Wests and the Tavis Smiley, because he's, like you said, he's always been on the front line. He has always been a soldier, you know, on the front line fighting for justice. No justice, no peace. And that was his mantra for a long time. And so that's why I don't understand, you know, the rationale for Cornel West, an academic, a person of esteemed credentials, that would even think about, you know, lashing out at someone like Al Sharpton that he knows has been out there on the front lines, and another academic like President Obama. I just don't understand what would make them do that. So,
right, I think the other part of that is that, you know, and the running joke in the black community and more nationally now, you know, as in recent years has been, you know, if you want something done, you call Reverend Jackson or you call Reverend Sharpton. That's mm-hmm. the running joke. If I get in trouble, I got beat up by the police, I'm calling Reverend Sharpton because I know he's going to come in and do something about it. He's going to come in and investigate. And you look at the time that both he and Jackson have spent on the front line. I mean, you go back to the fact that Jesse was on the porch, you know, when King was assassinated. He was mm-hmm. there. That's a long time being on the front line. And the things that he's accomplished over his career, getting the hostages freed and places he can go that they can't go because they don't have the credentials to go there. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
they can't go to a foreign country and get somebody free. But Jesse Jackson can do that for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because, he has history. He has experience on his side, as does Sharpton. So the fact that, you know, it's not that we need a new leader. We just need people to stay in their lane. So, you know, for every year that he's been at Princeton or Yale or Harvard or wherever he's been, can he take a summer and go to an HBCU and use some of that knowledge there and educate some of our children of color as well, not just the children of color that have that have it to go to Harvard, but can he go to an HBCU and impart some of that knowledge? Can Tavis, who's opened his school of journalism at Indiana or wherever he at, can he go take some of that somewhere and be a visiting professor for a semester, you know, free of charge to the school? That's how you empower the people. Then you get some credibility. You're not going to get any credibility from me sitting up on CNN talking about President Obama.
Right.
You know, and you're not going to get any credibility or any quote-unquote street cred when that's all you talk about. When did I tweeted Tavis and asked this question and I didn't get a response, but when did the poverty tour become a let's bash Obama tour? If we're going to talk about poverty, let's talk about poverty. And poverty is not just in lack of money, but poverty is also in lack of self-esteem, lack of resources. You know, there are some communities that you can't find a grocery store for 20 miles. That's a problem. Can we talk about how, you know, a Walmart can do one of their neighborhood stores in the neighborhood? You don't, okay, so you don't want to build a big super center in the neighborhood, but can we put a grocery store, a neighborhood market where we would still have access to vegetables and fruits and fresh stuff, fresh produce? But we're talking about the wrong things, and we know that our communities suffer from this. We've had one, as you stated a couple of months ago. We don't need another report about how to fix what's going on in the community. We really don't need another report. You can walk outside your door and figure out how to fix what's going on. And yet, I think our people are perishing. Scripture tells us for lack of knowledge. I would guarantee. And I have proof of this. My family lives in Kansas, and I am a news junkie, as you well know. And I hear stuff going on around the world all the time. I'll call home and invariably speak to one of my siblings or someone that lives there about some law I just saw passed in the state. They don't even know. They don't have a clue. That they didn't know about some of the voting ID requirements they have to have now. And these are people that are going to need to know that. They didn't know. They didn't know about that the governor sent back all the money for because he didn't want to pay for anything for Planned Parenthood. Not realizing that Planned Parenthood it doesn't do anything around abortion. But it helps treat different and give women access to mammograms and pap smears and things of that nature. But he don't want that. These are the people that are going to be most affected by that decision by that governor. So there's work to be done that doesn't require bus driving through. It requires you going to that city and meeting with that city council and saying to that city council, how are you helping the people in your community? Because, see, all politics is local, and it's the moment somebody gets elected that they forget why they wanted to get elected. They get caught up in all the other stuff, and the people still continue to suffer.
That's true. So you mentioned that all politics is local. And I want to shift now to some international politics for a moment. And basically, I want to talk a little bit about what happened with the Georgetown Hoya basketball players. And this is a nice transition because the basis of my question is going to be around international politics. Right, and we've been talking about politics, local or national politics, for the last hour or so. And so I want to shift now to perhaps an international political component. Now, Danny Groner writes in the Huffington Post blog last week that in the final minutes of a game between the Georgetown Hoyas and the Rockets in a team affiliated with the Chinese military, on Thursday, a fight broke out between players that only took on more significance because it coincided with the second day of Vice President Biden's first official trip to China. Now, he was not in attendance at the brawl, but the goodwill match ended in a tie. In the days afterwards, Georgetown coach John Thompson III said that the two teams have patched things up and that the fight had nothing to do with politics of the two countries. Still, some are skeptical. It's unclear what exactly touched off the fight through, presumably, it wasn't a discussion of the U.S. credit rating. So what was it all about? Now, more than a game, basketball is also a very physical game, and when violence erupts, it is rarely has to do with the game itself. Now, I'm no expert in international politics, but I think it's safe to say that the fight was more about basketball. It was more than just about basketball. What do you think about that, Gene?
Well, I think it probably was, but we'll never get the real story behind it. I think when you take a look at the footage, as you stated earlier, you take a look at the footage of how the game went down and how the game was being played and how the game was being called. You know, there's only so many times I'm going to allow you to, you know, to push me around before I respond and before I react. And so on that level, was it a power play on the Chinese government to try to say to this team of mostly African Americans that they represented the president, and so because, and they're in Georgetown at that, and so because that, you know, that's how they feel, they're trying to push them around. And so, you know, was there some symbolism there? Probably. But, you know, I just hope it was basketball at basketball and that Georgetown just got a little testy from being pushed around and felt like they had to, you know, assert themselves the only way they knew how.
Okay, that's fair. So my follow-up question would be then, where was the security for the American players? Now, I watched the video quite a few times, and it looked like they were ambushed. Now, that, of course, that's me and my military mind and the fact that I spent over a decade in the military and I fought in combat, that, you know, I know what an ambush looks like. But I also know that when something breaks out in the fashion that it did, that security would normally come to the aid of both sides, not just one side. But what I saw in the actual footage was that chairs were being thrown, water balls were being, you know, thrown at the players, and it took place for an extended period of time. So, was this an ambush? Where was the security in this thing?
No, well, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know where the security was, but I don't think it wasn't. Well, I don't know. I'm not gonna say that it was an ambush. But in looking at the footage, it does lend itself for some questions as to how things happen, how they happened, and there was a lack of response. I'm glad Vice President Biden wasn't there, because if that's the security, then, you know, everybody in the room would have been in trouble. Everybody in the gymnasium would have been in trouble.
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
It does bring up some questions in terms of, you know, how did it go down like it did, and where was security and what took them so long to respond? Because it seemed like they was fighting for a while. I mean, some real hard, down to the soul, you know, blows was being thrown. So it was definitely a brawl. Now, that's the first time in a long time that the word brawl is appropriate, because that was an all-out brawl right there.
And it was for an extended period of time. It wasn't like, you know, like what happened with Indiana, and they jumping out in the stands and they doing this and that, because people were, you know, were jumping to the aid of the fans, they were jumping to the aid of players, and I mean, it didn't take it to the next level. This, however, was taken to the next level. I mean, I saw players being dragged from one end of the court, half court, to the other end of the basketball court and out of bounds and still fighting. Now, the amount of time it takes to run from half court to the end, and then outside, and then pick up a chair, and then fight, and then more fighting, you know, without any security or anybody breaking the whole thing up, to me is suspicious. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that, you know, it was a setup, but it's to me, it's suspicious.
Right. I'll give you suspicious.
All right. And so in our final story for today, I want to talk about an article that you wrote. And I thought it was an outstanding article. It's entitled "Bounce Checks from America's Bank of Opportunity." Now, you write in the article, "Unfortunately, the checks are still bouncing. The poor in this country are still suffering beyond measure for a country that has so much. We want to romanticize Dr. King, much like we do Jesus himself. But both were concerned about how we treated the least of these. I hope this march and unveiling will remind people why King died in the first place. He died speaking up for the poor and the disenfranchised." You want to talk a little bit about that article?
Well, I absolutely love Mary Wright Elderman of Children's Defense Fund, who put the article out the other day. And in speaking about that, we have, you know, forgotten, as she stated, that what was actually talked about in the beginning of the speech. and that the I Have a Dream part was an add-on, but that the whole march was a march on jobs and poverty. And so here we are, 43 years later, 45, 46 years later from that march, and we're still needing to march on jobs and poverty, which means that America has not made good on her promise.
Mm-hmm.
That we all, you know, are created equal, and that we have access and we have these rights that some have been trampled upon over the last several decades. And so it's sad, but it's the reality that we live in right now, that, you know, America still owes us some things, not owes us in terms of I'm entitled to it, so to speak, but I'm only asking for what you said you were going to give me. So, you know, if you never said you were going to give me the $5, I wouldn't keep asking you for the $5. But since you said you was going to give it to me, I feel compelled to keep asking you for it. So, unfortunately, when we have to march, and people often say, well, why we have to go out and do this, and racism is over, and you know, we've went into a new era now with President Obama, and yet we still see all the same problems we had prior to President Obama. Police brutality hasn't went away. Driving while black hasn't gone away. Shooting people to kill as opposed to injure hasn't gone away. High number of execution of prisoners hasn't gone away, as is innocent people being executed hasn't gone away. Poverty, our education system is still separate and unequal. That, you know, those things are still real, and we're falling further and further behind on a global front. As you stated last week, I believe, not last week, but a couple weeks ago, how can we still be a superpower when we have all of these issues going on in the country? So, you know, I just think she was so on point in reminding us about what that speech was really all about in the beginning, and how we've made it, as you always talk about, people, the media have a way of how they change the message. And so that message of I have a dream is sweeter to hear than the message about the check not clearing.
Yeah, I'm going to read the backstory for those listeners out there that may not be familiar with Marion Wright Elderman's article in the Huffington Post entitled Bounce Checks from America's Bank of Opportunity. She writes, as our nation pauses to honor Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. with the dedication of a new memorial, on the anniversary of the historic 1963 March on Washington, most will focus on only part of the story. When many Americans think of the historic march, they think of Dr. King standing on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, delivering his inspiring I Have a Dream words he spontaneously added at the very end of his speech. For nearly 50 years, the powerful words in that section have been quoted all over the world. But too few people remember that the March on Washington wasn't focused just on racial equality, but was actually named the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, and was a demand for economic opportunity and economic justice for all. Too few know or remember the central metaphor that made up the first half of Dr. King's speech, the bounce check America had written to its black and poor citizens. So that's the backstory of the article that was written, and you so eloquently stated that people remember the I Have a Dream part, but they forget the bounce check part. And I'm glad to see Marion Wright Elderman come out and say that publicly, and to get and such a publication like the Huffington Post that get national attention, because people need to remember that. And I'm glad you also commented on the blog to kind of raise more awareness in our community about that same issue. Now, didn't you meet Marion Wright Elderman before?
I have met Marion Wright Elderman doing some consulting work I was doing previously, working with juvenile offenders and her prison pipeline initiative that she had. wanting to ensure that we were doing, states were doing what they needed to do to make sure that our children were being educated as opposed to being incarcerated.
So she's also, too, been on the front lines delivering, being more action-oriented versus just being more, theoretical-oriented.
Correct, yes. She'll come out with her organization, the Children Defense Fund. They come out with an annual report every year, and in that annual report it talks about what's happening in states, what states are doing well, and what states are doing that need some improvement. And so she generally has some sort of forum in different states around the country to talk about that report and to implore states to do things differently to have an impact on the numbers. And a lot of it around education, in terms of making sure Head Start programs don't go away in our states. And if you notice, in a lot of states with this turnover and governorships, a lot of Republican governors coming in, one of the first things they want to take away is some of that early childhood education and development program. And we will be directly impacted by that. And so we're already dealing in an economy where the only job I can find is a minimum wage job, so I'm working two of them to try to make ends meet, and so I can subsidize my child care by having a head start. You take away that, then I'm not going to be able to go to work because I won't have anywhere that I can afford to send my child. So now I'm just, now I'm completely dependent upon you as opposed to trying to be able to do things on my own. So she spends a lot of time trying to ensure that education of our children is not taken away, and that some of those early childhood development programs stay in place.
Well, that's our show for today. I would like to thank all our listeners for tuning in. I would like to send out a special thanks to John Scott, Abby Phelps, and of course, Jima. You can visit Jima's blog at askjema.blogspot.com. That's askjema.blogspot.com. Also, Jima is the primary author of TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. In fact, all of the wonderful stories that you hear today and all the days that we talk on current events with Patrick Cook, you can thank Jima for that. To visit that blog, just go out to TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade Talk Radio, all one word, .blogspot.com. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. So don't forget to bookmark our site and visit my blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. Until next time, remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to current events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sounds of George Spencer in Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce.